It was probably the best weekend of the season. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Fox Footy Monday Review podcast. My name's Tom Morris, and I've got to say, I can't remember the last time a podcast was so jam-packed with content, and two great men join us this morning to review all the Round 14 action. The first, of course, is Damien Martin enthusiast Riley Beveridge. Riley, welcome to the Monday Review podcast.
It's not been a great weekend for my boy. He got ruined on Twitter last night. But yeah, thanks, Tom. It was probably best weekend I can remember in almost a decade, really. Mm. So many close games, so many sort of intense contests, and a lot of good stories to come from it. So looking forward to getting stuck in.
Four games decided by a combined total of 7 points, and five games decided by a total of 21 points on a remarkable weekend of football. We'll dissect it all very shortly. But we need to introduce the great man who has lacked sleep the last few nights, of course, stemming from Thursday night's disaster in Sydney, podcast swingman Julian DeStoop. Welcome.
It's funny you say that, Tom. I think it's the flattest I've been after an Essendon game for years. And I actually struggled. I think you might be right. Yeah. I actually struggled to get to sleep on Friday night.
I didn't actually know that.
And I was still flat Saturday, and my brother-in-law, who's mad Essendon, was exactly the same. Yeah, it was just so disappointing that last 4 minutes.
Does it make you question your own sanity?
It's funny how it can make you feel so flat and angry. And my wife actually sneakily recorded me watching the game about halfway through the
second. Oh, I'd love to see that.
And if it gets out, I'll tell you.
Can we find that flattering
footage?
Who could we speak to? Hodgie. I think Tim Hodges was the man we need to speak to.
It's been deleted immediately.
We will talk about Sydney versus Essendon. We'll start off with that because I'd like to work chronologically here, because every game, maybe apart from GWS versus Brisbane, is probably worth an in-depth discussion. So let's work chronologically. Thursday night, Essendon versus Sydney.
Friday night.
You're missing a game here.
Sorry about Thursday.
When I say chronologically, let's start properly chronologically. Hawthorne versus Adelaide. I was just pulling your leg there, fellas. Well done. How is it that Hawthorn Jules can beat Adelaide at the Adelaide Oval? Are we living in bizarro world?
That's just season 2017, really. It was unbelievable. I thought they'd win the game by 10 goals, the Crows. And even at halftime, they dominated possession. They were 3 goals up. I thought, yeah, Hawthorn's fired their best shot. The Crows will run over them in the second half. But it was the opposite. Bad, bad loss for the Adelaide Crows. That's one they might regret come season's end, given it's so tight. But the Hawks have just managed to get up for certain games this year, haven't they? If you look at their wins, they've beaten Melbourne. Mm-hmm. They've beaten Sydney in Sydney. They beat West Coast. They've beaten Adelaide. So they haven't won that many games, but they've actually won some really big ones.
It reminded me a lot of that Sydney game where Clarko threw Hodge behind the ball, put Burgoyne forward of the ball. Both had a huge influence on the game. They're two veterans. I think this season, given how poor Hawthorn started the year and everyone sort of jumped on Alistair Clarkson's back, we forget just how good a coach he is. He's such a tactical mastermind and was the architect behind that win. Some really shrewd decisions throughout the game and a really big win for Hawthorn, who is now, it's almost hard to judge their season because they have had such good wins in amongst all the terrible losses.
It's crazy. You cannot tip Hawthorn. And I saw them play live, 2-3 weeks ago against Gold Coast.
Yep.
And admittedly, they had an underwhelming team in, yep, with missing a lot of experience. But they looked every bit the 17th place they were heading into the Adelaide game. And then to go and beat the Crows, who many people tip for the premiership, it's a real worry for the Crows as well.
The Crows are the story out of this game, aren't they, really? I mean, do they have a plan B? They don't seem to be able to play when teams slow them down. And Rory Sloane's got to find a way to get through the tag.
Yeah,
because he's just having no impact on these games when he's tagged out. And it goes back to the fact they don't have the quality midfielders to support him when he is shut out of the game.
There's plenty of players who've been unable to break a tag from time to time, and Rory Sloane is one of them at the moment. But most of the... to go back to West Coast, for example, when Ben Cousins got tagged and Daniel Kerr or Chris Judd stepped up, where are Adelaide Stars? Where's the next level? Yeah. What are the Crouchers doing? Why aren't they stepping up as they should be?
I thought they were okay. They certainly won plenty of the footy. I wonder if they need a bit more grunt in there, and I wonder if they look at Scott Thompson, who hasn't played a senior game this year. I think he had another 33 and kicked two goals in the sample on the weekend. He's a class above in the sample, so I wonder if they look at that. But so far, they've been reluctant to do that, and I wonder why. I mean, I think the injury to Cam Ellis-Yolman's probably hurt them, because I think they probably saw him as the man that could come into the side. But yeah, as you said, Jules, if Sloane's getting tagged out of games, they find it really hard to win the footy out of the middle. And that was the case on Friday night, Thursday night.
It's a worry. I remember times when Gary Ablett, that team wouldn't tag him because he was untaggable. Rory Sloane, everyone knows he's taggable, and as a result, he will get tagged every single week, won't he?
Absolutely.
And there was the case at the start of the year where you probably thought he was one of those players that was untaggable.
Yeah, a lot of the inside players generally are. Yeah. But They've found a way to stop him.
And we're not saying it through like a I think he still works quite hard. He doesn't quite found the method yet, has he?
And really works hard, as he said, but hasn't found a way to influence the game. And it's a big win for taggers across the country as well, because we saw Sam Reid do a really good job on Dane Zorko. So maybe it is coming back in vogue.
You're the young player expert, Riley, through under-18's work. You're at Punt Road on the weekend, of course, watching Vic Metro play. I'm interested in Ryan Burton. Is he the best, or should he be the front runner for the Rising Star Award?
I think so, definitely. Yeah. Definitely should be the front runner, because his impact this year, playing in a range of positions, I mean, he started the season playing across half-back, went forward at times on Thursday night and kicked a couple of really important goals. He's a class above, and it's such a contrast between the man that the draft pick that Hawthorn got him for was the man that...
Jed Anderson.
Jed Anderson, who gets omitted this week. So it's a real sliding doors moment in that sense. But, geez, you wonder if North would like that pick back again, because he's turning into a really quality player.
They took a punt on him, though, didn't they?
Well, he missed all of his draft year with a broken leg.
Yeah.
So many people in his bottom age year thought he'd get a chance to go pick one. Then he suffered that broken leg, missed the entire season and fell back a bit. So they did take a punt, but the quality of him was always there and it was always evident.
Where's our heroes and villains, Tom? Are we doing that? When are we doing that?
Oh, we can get into the heroes and villains a bit later on, but I think it's important to get into the agenda first of all. But we've done the entree. Let's get to the main course. Essendon, Sydney, Julian, can you just give us your synopsis of the match, and especially the last couple of minutes?
Well, they did a Richmond. There's no other way to look at it. They did a Richmond. We all sit back and laugh when Richmond do it, but the Bombers did it, from Goddard's kick out to Danaher lost a contest he shouldn't have lost. Should have kicked it wider than he actually did. The last stoppage was a disaster. But in fairness to Sydney, they manned up the ground really well in that last 4 or 5 minutes. They didn't give Essendon the option to chip it around. And unfortunately, the Bombers just didn't get it done. And there was one incident where they were stiff. I was watching that last clearance before the goal to Nick Newman. I thought, why did Connor McKenna stop there? He popped a finger and he couldn't lay the tackle.
That's right.
So they were a little bit unlucky in certain cases, but you can't lose games. And it was such a big moment for Essendon. They got 19 points up. It was a huge game. You win it and you take a big step towards finals. And they just stuffed it up.
I think the fire alarms had to go off. There's steam coming out of Julian's
ears. My brother-in-law, I was telling Riley before on the way here, my brother-in-law texted me, Mark Tanky, if you're listening, 4.5 minutes to go, Hurley kicks the goal and said, we're home. And I just wrote back, shut the F up.
I tweeted Swan Song. Thought that was it.
We've lost 3 games to them at the SCG by a point.
Really?
We've
is that right?
We've seen their SCG record. In 1 point wins, the Swans against every other team. 1 win, 4 losses against Essendon. 4 wins, 1 loss. They just win the close ones on that bloody ground.
That's something only a besieged fan knows.
Oh, geez. What did you make of it, Rolls?
Shattering.
I thought the incident that I want to talk about is that Joe Danaher kick.
Yeah.
Where he kicks it to the 1-on-1, Cal Mills marks it, dishes it off to the crayfish.
But he's trying to go to Tom Bellchambers.
Again.
Yeah,
exactly.
He was.
I think an underrated part of this is Buddy Franklin's pressure that he puts on. So he cuts him off. He cuts him off at the angle. He knows it's a left foot kick. He knows he's going to go around to try and go wide.
Just as Buddy does.
And Buddy sprints, does really well, puts some really good defensive pressure on, and I think almost forces Joe Danaher to pull that kick. So I think that's been lost in the midst of it, because Danaher's copped a lot of criticism. But I think that's been lost in the midst of that, just how well Buddy did to put that pressure on.
I thought his last 5 minutes were sensational, Buddy. He was smart enough to get up the ground where the numbers weren't when Essendon would drop it. The other thing I just don't understand, and every team does this, when they get, say, a goal and there's only a goal just a minute to go, why do you only leave one forward? Surely you can leave 3 forwards, and that gives you 3 others you can push back. Zach Merritt wins the clearance. Mm. If he's got 2 up there, you never know. They might have been able to neutralise that ball. But it's just inviting the ball to go back inside your 50 and
at
put
least
yourselves under pressure.
At least 2 forwards.
At least 2 to 3.
What was Alan Richardson's quote in the coach's box that time when Lee Montagne kicked the goal against Melbourne? I only want 2 forwards.
That's right.
I only want 2. I think 2 or 3
you
makes sense.
You can't
it?
Have one.
No.
And good on Gary Rowan, because he's been the unluckiest player in the competition over the last 5 years. That broken leg, the crazy backflip he did against Carlton this year, where he could have broken his neck, and he's kicked 2 match-winning goals in the last 2 weeks. So it looks like his luck's finally starting to turn, and good on him.
But where is Sydney? I mean, are they back? I mean, let's be honest. They should have lost the last 2 weeks.
I know, but they're not
that convincing, are they?
They're not the Sydney
of last year.
No, but in their favour is nobody is that convincing.
No, that's true.
And I think, given the right conditions and the right situation, they can still win the flag.
Oh, no doubt they can if they get in.
Which would be unbelievable after being 0-6. That would be a story. That would be almost movie territory, wouldn't it?
I tell you, it was unbelievable the other night, and I was staggered he didn't get best on ground. Universally, was Josh Kennedy.
Yeah.
Some people gave it to Hurley, who was great, but Josh Kennedy,
he's having an awesome
his
season.
Record against Essendon is like Buddy against Essendon. He's just been unstoppable.
Yeah, it must be that his father passing it down to him through the eight from the 80s, the Hawthorn-Essendon rivalry. Just doesn't.
Yeah, see, you can't get rid of it, Buddy Kennedy. Yeah.
All right, let's get into the action for Saturday. But before we do that, like your biggest winners and losers for the weekend, Riley, winner and loser.
My winner this week is Sam Reed. I touched on it before, but kept Dane Zorko to 5 disposals. Didn't have a single touch after halftime. He's been arguably the form midfield of the competition over the last month. So for him to sort of play his role in the weekend, and GWS is probably always going to win that game regardless of what happened. But the fact that he managed to thwart one of the best mids in the competition at the moment was a huge boost for Sammy Reed.
What about you, Jules?
It has to be Jack Viney. It's probably a bit obvious, but 38 disposals, 26 contested, bung shoulder, crunched Shannon Hearn late in the game. It's his best game.
He's in trouble.
No, I'm not sure about that.
I just think of that Jack Siebel incident.
Yeah, but I think they've altered the rules since then.
He was off the ground.
But he's entitled to go for that ball. The ball was above Shannon Hearn's head. Yeah. He's allowed to jump up.
The Jack Siebel incident's irrelevant now. That you don't look back at incidents too. You can't look that far back.
The Zebra one was absolute. It was a travesty of justice. He got what he got for that.
For 4 weeks, didn't he?
Yeah, it was
ridiculous. Well, 3 weeks.
I think he got 4 because of his carryovers.
You can't even look back a month these days. So you really just have to take it in isolation. When I first saw it, I thought, I agree, I think Vine is in some trouble.
I agree. Real speed, I thought, oh. And then you see the replay, like, he's entitled to go for that ball.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really he's so fierce, Jack Viney. And the effort, we will talk about Melbourne West Coast, but the effort he put in without Nathan Jones was incredible. Biggest loser for the weekend, Rolls?
Dane Beams. He can't cop a break at the moment.
He's stiffened.
Yeah.
And that was just so unlucky that it had to be Shane Mumford coming through. If that was Toby Green, he probably bounces off him.
Completely fair bump.
Oh, exactly.
Quality bump.
Not
wasn't
saying anything wrong with it, but far out, he's unlucky at the moment.
Collingwood's midfield. They were poor on the weekend. If you lined them up on head-to-head, on the paper, they should win it. But look, they were crabs. Tony Shaw summed it up perfectly, these stats in the Herald Sun today. They gained just 12 metres of disposal, the whole team, which is six goals this year. Trelaw, 8 metres of disposal, who saw Norman run and carry. Adams, 8 metres. They were so...
They won plenty of it, didn't they?
But take the game on. When they've played their best footy this year, Collingwood, they've taken the game on. But it's just like that team. It fluctuates from week to week. The style... It must be so frustrating for Collingwood people because it was such a big game, and I think you were there.
I was there.
They should have been 8 goals down at quarter time.
Yeah, they should have been well further down.
So flat.
I just don't understand how Collingwood's midfield is. I mean, we all know it's so good, but it doesn't matter how good your midfield is if you've got no one to kick to or no options further afield, and maybe that's why they go sideways all the time.
Potentially.
Or
it's a chicken and the egg, but we've talked about this before.
But the best team this year, no matter who they are, when teams win, they always take the game on. You have to be bold.
Well, look, look at the way Essendon got back into that game the other night. They were 4 goals down. They just went for it.
Yeah.
And it's not always going to come off, but you'd rather lose that way than the way Collingwood lost on the weekend.
Yeah, Nathan Buckley was frustrated after the game as well. I think he conceded that Port Adelaide were probably too classy, but for Collingwood to chip it sideways continuously without actually going anywhere, it's like that switch that Collingwood was doing on Queen's birthday all the time. They were switching the play across the field, but for no good reason. There was no options further up, so it was just going back and forth and back and forth. In the end, opposition teams pick you off. Saturday's action. Let's continue on this Port Adelaide versus Collingwood theme, but I want to talk about Robbie Gray first, Riles. Yep. How good is he at the moment, and how good was he on the weekend?
He was fantastic on the weekend. Ball was almost attracted to him inside 50. I think he kicked 5 goals, had 3 goal assists, heap of score involvements. Begs a good question whether or not, if you've got a player like Robbie Gray, you've got to play your best players forward of the ball, I think. We've seen Richmond do it with Dustin Martin this year to great effect. GWS have done it really well with Toby Green in the last 3 or 4 years. Port Adelaide are doing it now with Robbie Gray. He's a much more dangerous player deep forward than he is through the midfield, I think.
Which says something, because he was won three best and fairest in a row as a midfielder.
And he's a great clearance player. I think it comes back to them. I mean, they've got Power Pepper, who they can chuck in there now. And Richmond's got Prestia. That's why they can do it. So if you got that luxury, keep them forward.
I wrote about this last week. How Melbourne's got to play Christian Petrarca. If they've got such a talented midfield group, they've got to keep Petrarca forward and use him less through the midfield. And as you said before, I was at the under-18s on Saturday, and all of the best midfielders in that game, Vic Metro v Vic Country, which are probably going to make up probably 80 or 90% of the first round of the draft, are mids that can go forward. There was kids that were winning 20 touches but kicking 3 goals. And I think that's what you've got to do now, because you've got to learn to play both crafts, because I think if you're going to have an impact, you need to be able to play as a forward, as a midfielder.
We all love key forwards that can mark because they're tall, and small forwards that can crumb, but imagine being able to do both. And Robbie Gray at the moment, and Jamie Elliott and these sort of guys, they're mid-sized players that can do it all. They are so hard to match up. Robbie Gray was playing the deepest forward on the week. He was full forward.
Well, this is my thing. So you've got Neville Jetta at Melbourne. You've got Nick Smith at Sydney, but can you think of another really solid lockdown small defender? No. There's not many that can go with these players.
Not. Well, there's not many in the history of the game, really.
Exactly.
Who's the best lockdown small defender since 2000?
Because you wouldn't say Corey Enright was locked down, would you?
No.
He was more of an interceptor.
It'd have to be someone like Dustin Fletcher. It sounds ridiculous, but he played on smalls.
He could play on anyone.
But yeah. there's not many.
Exactly.
Why he was in the top 10 fullbacks of all time.
According to you, Jules. We worry about Collingwood now, don't we? They've got to win 7 of their next 9.
They're not going to do it. They're not good enough.
And as a result, does Buckley lose his job?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
It's hard to know. We don't know. We don't know what Collingwood's board's thinking.
Well, Eddie Maguire's lost 15 kilograms on an unbelievable diet. He's been eating Italian. He's been eating herbs for the last 3 weeks, and now he's in England.
And he'll put a ball back on. He's going to enjoy himself, as he should.
Hello to Mr. Eduardo Maguire over there in England at the moment, watching his son play cricket. Jules, you mentioned Nathan Buckley, but if he goes at the end of the year, then where are Collingwood at? Do they need to start again? Is it too hypothetical? Is it too early to look at that now?
I don't think they need to start again because they've got their list is okay. It's pretty young. So I don't think it's a complete rebuild, but I think some of the building blocks are in place, particularly through the middle of the ground. So I don't think it's a massive repair job, but look, it's hard to say. I mean, we don't know what they're going to do in the next 9 weeks.
No, we don't.
I don't think they're going to make the finals, but they could win 6 and just miss out, play some good footy, and they'll keep him.
Well, Champion Data rates their back half of the year the hardest of any team. So
don't worry about that this year with fixtures. That's a load of rubbish.
Oh, Glenn Luff. G'day to Glenn Luff
over
there.
No, we love Luffy, but even he would know that this season is on acid.
Anything can happen. Yeah, you did tweet that actually, Jules.
Someone quite said, well, how would you know? Good point, I wouldn't know.
Let's touch on GWS versus Brisbane. Are the Giants the clear favourites, Riley, now?
They've probably got the fewest weaknesses. Yeah. So you have to say they're a chance. I mean, the way their midfield played without Josh Kelly in there, like Dylan Shiel, Lockie Whitfield, and Callan Ward were really good. They have to be.
They've got to be.
And Jeremy Cameron and John Patton each kicking four up four.
John Patton plays like that. I mean, he took that game by the scruff of its neck. 4 goals, I think 13 marks.
Yeah.
6 of them were inside 50. So he's got to keep that form going because there's been a few question marks about him recently.
Yeah, and Brisbane clearly the 18th team as well. So not a hell of a lot to read into that game. But there is in this one, West Coast versus Melbourne, Jules. Last week, I think we discussed, or the week before, we spoke about Melbourne being contenders. And we sort of said it with a smile and a laugh. And maybe they could have a fairy tale. But at this point, a top four finish is a realistic possibility. And as a result, so is a premiership, isn't it?
I don't want to pump myself up, but I did say 2 months ago they're a sneaky chance for the flag in this podcast, and I was scoffed at.
By who?
Well,
not by me.
No, it might have been. Was it Ben? Maybe Drew? I don't know. Someone. No, they're absolutely a chance.
What makes you say that?
The comparison to the Bulldogs is quite interesting because they've had to throw their side around. Simon Goodwin's had to find other ways to win. Tom McDonald playing a different position. Pedersen in the ruck. They've had to throw a lot of things around. And then resilient, they got a good midfield. They're in very high up for clearances, contested footy, disposal differential, and they've got Gorn back now. They'll get Hogan back. I think they're playing a sustainable brand of footy in a year where there's not many standout teams. They're a chance.
They've got a really interesting month ahead. Yeah, so they play Sydney on Friday night at the G, which is going to be a cracker.
It's going to be hard, isn't it? They're going to lose a couple of players.
Yeah. Then they've got Carlton, who they should beat, and then they play Port Adelaide and Adelaide in back-to-back weeks. So it's a really tough month. 3 of those 4 games are at home, or one of them's in Darwin, I think, but it classifies as a home game. So
it was a tough 5 weeks, though, wasn't it? They ticked the first one off.
Exactly.
Well, they've ticked two off, haven't they, really? Yeah. I mean, they beat the Dogs, which was...
Looked
tough on
paper.
It
wasn't an easy fixture either.
No.
Yeah. It was a ripping game of footy, the West Coast Melbourne one. And Tom McDonald pushing forward and kicking 5. Is that more Tom McDonald and showing that he's one of the best swingmen in the AFL, or is it a big tick to Simon Goodwin?
It's a tick to Simon Goodwin for realising that Oscar and Sam Frost were doing so well.
Sam Frost has been important for Melbourne.
Yeah. He takes the game on
really
as well.
Important.
He really takes the game on.
But the fact that Goody managed to realise how important they'd been playing as a duo and say we can afford to use Tom McDonald in different areas of the ground, I think Tom McDonald's long-term future is almost like a sort of Nick Riewoldt light in the sense that he can almost play as a wing and push forward and kick a few goals as well. So, I mean, he played his best footy over the last month with Gorn out almost as an on-baller when he was playing in the ruck. So there's no reason why he can't do that.
He's extremely athletic, Tom McDonald, isn't he?
Yeah.
I heard Danny Frawley on radio yesterday saying that he'd been the top 3 long-distance runners in the competition. And that surprised me a little bit. But he does look like He can run all day and he moves brilliantly. He's agile. The whole maybe he's wasted a little bit as a lockdown sort of centre half back.
I think you've got to utilise his skills forward half the ground, and playing on a wingman allows him to do that.
So what happens when Hogan comes back? What do you do with Hogan, Pedersen, and then obviously McDonald's in the side, but where do you play him?
Well, I think Wiedemann kicked six in the VFL on the weekend.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's room for Wiedemann, but McDonald's good enough to play alongside those guys as a Riewoldt type, a forward running wingman. I agree with you, Riley. And I think Pedersen's playing brilliant footy.
He was good when the game was on the line.
Who, Pedersen?
Beautiful kick to Tom McDonald. He's to set up the second last goal.
He's a journeyman, and I love it.
You can't leave him out.
No, you can't. No way. And as a second ruckman, it's very important who can also push forward. It's a perfect mix for Melbourne at the moment. Absolutely perfect. Clayton Oliver, thoughts?
Love it.
In diving?
Both.
Love him. I love Clayton Oliver, and I don't think he's going to be a recidivist, but if he had his time again.
A word.
I love that word. Yeah. It's like panacea that Andrew Demetrio used to use for tanking. I think he'd like his time again. Well, it didn't look good.
My only criticism of it is the fact that he didn't do it when the game was alive and he could have won a free kick out of it. Did the halftime. Yeah. You've wasted your one chance
that
to
dive.
That
brings up another point. Why can't we pay a free kick after the halftime siren? What if someone turns around and punches you in the face? So he was reported, but there's no free kick.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That seems a bit weird to me.
That's why there's so many malaise that start. Yeah.
Because you can pay one before the start of
that's
the call.
That's what I mean. Yeah, that's right.
Real strange. Weird. And on that, just jumping back, the rush behind rule, the Sydney Essendon one's a real weird one as well. If an attacker rushes it through, then it's not a behind.
Yes.
But if a defender does it, it is.
Yeah, it's strange. Anyway. There's plenty of those.
Just on Clayton Oliver, though, he copped a lot of criticism in the aftermath of it, obviously. I think you can take a dive without being a diver.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So if he does it five times in the next year, then he's a diver. But he can do it. If it's a one-off isolated incident, it looks embarrassing.
Yeah.
But people saying he's a diver, he's not a diver, he just took a dive.
Well, it's a continuum though, isn't it? If the person doesn't touch you, then it's a genuine dive. If you're just making the most of a small amount of contact, as I think he did, then it's still on the diving end of the spectrum, but it's not necessarily an out and out what we talk about with Mexican soccer.
Yeah, that's
dive,
like,
do we?
That's like Rance last week. Yes, he incendiated, but he did get contact. He just made it look worse.
Yeah. We're not trying to defend it, but because we don't like it as a culture in the game. But
I don't mind it.
Well, there's plenty of people that make the most of contact.
So does Schofield get a week?
No.
If he made contact to the chin,
insufficient contact.
Insufficient force, please.
Okay, well, just asking the question.
Absolutely insufficient. Yeah. You know, if it was a hot spot, there wouldn't be any light up whatsoever on Clayton Oliver's
chin. So Clayton doesn't get a fine for?
No, I don't think so. He might get a fine for telling Damien Martin where to go, an all-time great of Australian
Melbourne
cricket.
Players definitely have the best use of social media. They've got that covered.
Does he have enough credits in the bank to be going after Damien Martin?
This is brilliant.
No, this is what we were saying last week. Like Tom Bug, like have some personality.
Yeah,
it's brilliant to see.
I loved it.
You guys would have been too young. I remember watching that test, and
that
was
two.
A graceful shot. It was so bad, so un-Damien Martin.
He just spooned it to cover. Didn't play another test match for 6 years.
Do you reckon Clayton did that himself? Like he even put the link to the video on his tweet.
Amazing.
I wonder who told him about that, because there's no way he went back to...
Well, he wouldn't have been alive.
No, he wasn't. He was -3.5.
Very funny.
Oh, Damien Martin, an elegant batsman. Brings tears to the eyes.
Move on, Tom.
Move on. North Melbourne Dogs. So we had two ridiculous games on Saturday night. You need a split screen on the TV if you're sitting at home, because both games were amazing. North can't win close ones. Why is that, Jules?
That's a good question. Is it? I mean, it was a poor... That last play from the Bulldogs was too easy. They went from one end to the other and didn't touch the ball. So maybe that's just on-field setup. It's not a coincidence you keep losing close games, surely. I mean, look at the... Is it the talent? I mean, look, Chris Scott's 9-1 in games decided by less than a kick. Is that because he's got Joel Selwood and Patrick Dangerfield
and
North Melbourne
Day?
So they're 4-16. And I think the Dogs are 9-2 under Beveridge. Yeah. So those figures aren't coincidence. But, Dogs, a bit better, but not convinced... Yet, after that performance.
What did you make of the two controversial incidents? There was the Sean Higgins one and then the Mason Wood free kick.
Great decision, Mason Wood. The umpire got that spot on.
I thought the 50 was a bit harsh, though.
Yeah, maybe in the circumstances.
Because Ben Brown played on very quickly. And if you actually watch it back, the umpire closest to it says play on.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Is that right?
Yeah, the 50 was a bit tough. But the Sean Higgins one annoys me. Now, why don't we have the clock on the scoreboard
because
for the
Mason
last...
Wood.
So typical. What one incident and we change it? It's like the sliding rule.
But what?
The, but the rule is there. The clock is. You can use it if you want.
And
so
this is my thing.
What, good luck to you in the last 2 minutes if you see the clock and waste time. That's the rule.
It's almost like they've done it. If it is true and they have done it as a result of what Mason Wood did against St Kilda a couple of years back. What was bad about that?
Nothing.
He used the rule.
That's
for
the
good
rule.
Effect. It's
oh
the
my
rule.
God. Are we? Oh, I hate this argument because the clock shouldn't be on the big screen. There's no countdown clock ever on the big screen in footy. The umpire has a watch on. He can count to 30 and then he can call play
that's
on.
That's a different argument, but we've got it there for 28 minutes of the quarter and then we take it off. You either don't have it or you
no,
have it.
No, but it counts up for 28 minutes of the quarter.
No, but the 30-second shot clock is there.
Oh,
but
yeah,
they
yes.
take it off for the last
But I'm saying
minutes.
It shouldn't be there at all. Ever.
But that's okay. But if you're going to have it there for 28 minutes, have it there for 30.
Yes, I agree with
if
that.
If Sean Higgins got injured then, all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
They mucked that up. The closest umpire has to be the one telling him to play
The closest
on.
Umpire didn't either. It was
that's what I'm saying. That, and, that,
and, Jack,
and Stringer
Jack
was close
was
to him.
The only one that saw that.
Yeah, very dangerous, that situation.
From your illustrious...
He cleaned him up as well.
Now, Riley, you're playing footy this week. We know that. Now, but from your illustrious footy career, Jules,
come back.
Have you... ever been more excited than when there's a sitting duck, a player that doesn't know you're coming and you can absolutely flatten them? Is there any better feeling?
Probably not. I was normally the sitting duck. That was the problem.
Todd Goldstein, Riley, is struggling at the moment. What's going to happen with him?
I thought he had a good game last week, but he was poor again on the weekend. Madge played predominantly forward. Braden Pruce had a very good game in the VFL.
Goldstein's biggest issue is the fact that he's got Braden Pruce
playing
such good footy below him.
And you've got to wonder now, is he even in the best 22?
But I just think it'd be a good decision for club and player if they parted ways.
Yeah,
at the
but
end
what
of
are you
going
to get for him now? I mean, well, you could have got 2 first-round picks for him last year.
Yeah, I still think you'd get a first round. If you're a team that thinks you're in the mark and you don't have
so
a ruckman.
Who does he fit, though? Who's going after him?
That's a good question. I'd have to think about that. Off the top of my head, St Kilda would be handy. St Kilda.
Someone like Richmond.
Billy Long has had one kick in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I know he's had a few handballs, but Todd Goldstein can get.
Hey, would you back Tom Hickey to turn it around? He's still young enough.
Yeah, well, they've got this. They've got 4 ruckmen in their senior list, St Kilda. Holmes, Pierce, Longer and Hickey. So maybe 2 of them we need to go. It's a tough one. Goldstein's still a good player.
He's still a good player.
Yeah, but it's where he
fits.
But
would it help him a new challenge somewhere else?
Maybe.
In a team that can possibly win a flag.
Last week, he wants to win a premiership at North Melbourne.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, everyone wants to win a premiership where they're playing. But
yeah, I'm not sure that's realistic in his time frame.
Anyway, Geelong versus Freo. It was an interesting game. It started off in bizarre and unfortunate fashion for Joel Selwood with that head clash with Hayden Ballantyne. But in the end, Freo were brave because they took it up to Geelong away from home. But Geelong were probably even more brave because they only had 18 fully fit players. Scott Selwood had a hamstring dangling by a thread for most of the second half.
And you've mentioned the word brave there. I would have liked to have seen Fremantle be a bit more brave in the third quarter.
Oh, you mean bold?
Well, brave and bold. I guess it's almost the same thing. But they're down to one on the bench. Yeah. And they just continually let Geelong have a spare and kick it to him. They get a couple more goals there. They win the game. They're out of sight. But I guess that's not the Ross Lyon mantra. And I don't want to be too negative on Fremantle. They went down there with a weakened team. Their kids were good. And they nearly won. They should have won from where they were. But I just thought in that third quarter they had the real chance. I think Jared Healy mentioned it. Run them off their legs, put them out of the game, but they just kept Geelong close enough with the way they used the ball.
Mm.
Like Cam McCarthy, he would have been so frustrated yesterday. They kept kicking it over his head.
But that's Ross Lyon, though, isn't it? I mean, he has his method, and it's never ever been bold, really, has it? Although they did increase it and get it better, but it's never going to be Blitzkrieg style football.
Yeah,
where's Geelong? They're third. I don't think they're much good.
I'm not sure. I don't think they're the third best side in the comp.
No, I don't think so.
Who is the third best side in the comp? It's probably Melbourne, to be honest.
Yeah, Melbourne's a more... I think Melbourne's a more rounded team than Geelong.
I'd back Geelong to beat Melbourne in a final.
In a final, maybe. If it was next week, I'd back Melbourne.
But that's all that matters at the moment. I mean,
it does.
Top four.
I know.
It's all that... It's going to shuffle around the eight for the top 14 teams for the next 6 or 8 weeks. But then once you reach finals, who would you back? And I'd back Geelong more than anyone, maybe apart from GWS at the moment.
It's funny.
I don't think they're that good.
No, I don't think they're that good.
I don't think anyone's that good.
I think they're almost like a 5-10 side.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, really?
It seems strange, but...
not with the two best players.
We're saying, like, in a season where it's so close and so entertaining, you'd almost be disappointed if West Coast limped into the finals. Similar story with Geelong. Mm. I mean, they're a good team, but nothing... They haven't really excited me at all this year. And I watched that West Coast Geelong game last week. I thought we were watching two good sides, but not two great sides.
Can I say something totally against the grain, too?
Go, Julian.
I love Hayden Ballantyne. He's fantastic. He sparked them yesterday.
Yeah.
And they've missed him. I'd love to. If
he had a weird day as well.
You can say what you want about him, but I think you'd love him on your football side.
Yeah, and on Freo players, my pet hate in football at the moment is players on the boundary who have a chance to kick a goal and instead they try to centre the ball. Lockie Weller should have had a crack there.
Yeah,
he's 45 metres out, agree, and he's actually got no one near him, and he's a skillful player. Take it on yourself. What does Patrick Dangerfield do? He has a crack in that situation.
Yeah, I'm
take
totally
it on yourself.
Agree.
Michael Walter should have kicked a goal.
Oh. Yeah, he should have.
Such a skillful player.
Yeah. He should have
been disappointed on that. He'd be
sitting there, there was seconds left, and you were counting down.
How good was Chris Scott's reaction, by the way? I loved
that. Oh, that was awesome.
That was fantastic.
He's very entertaining in the coach's box, Chris Scott.
I was worried there might be... There was such a noise on the TV when I was watching. I was worried there might be a Chris Connolly-type Tasmania situation. Sirengate. Yes.
Oh, boy.
Because you wait, it goes 4-3-2-1, and then you wait, it seems like another 2 or 3 seconds before the siren goes. It was a great game of footy, yet another one for the weekend. And Freo, in the end, weren't quite good enough. But they're playing some reasonable football from time to time. You're right, Jules.
Maybe like Hawthorn.
Yeah. Really hard to tip.
Very hard to tip.
Riley, you're at Carlton versus Richmond.
Yes.
Talk us through that one, and where did Carlton go wrong?
I think a lot of credit has to go to Damien Hardwick.
Mm.
Because I think he realised the way Carlton likes to play their footy and get numbers behind the ball and attacked purely from on the counter. So the amount of times Richmond pierced open Carlton on the break was incredible. I mean, I think they kicked 4 of their 5 goals in the first half from defensive 50. They kicked 8 goals from their defensive half of 11 for the entire match.
And so 24 marks inside 50, didn't they? I think Richmond.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's not a sustainable model. You can't play like that every week. But I think the fact that he realised this is how you beat Carlton, we'll be pragmatic, we'll go away from what we like to do for 1 week only just to get the 4 points. He's
coaching well. Yeah, he's coaching really well.
Yeah, and I think it's important we give him that credit given the amount of stick he copped. When he was on the couch last year and he said, "Oh, I think we're a team that can play finals," everyone laughed.
Oh, absolutely. No one believed him.
Not you, though, Riles.
Oh, no, Riley's been big on Richmond, in fairness.
I tip Richmond for the 8.
You and I have a little bit of a bet going on that, Riley.
We have a bit of plunder
I think
on
you're
that.
In trouble, Tom.
No, I think I don't know.
It's going to be interesting to see what Basher gets tonight.
Yeah.
I think that's one that needs to go to the tribunal.
Why does it need to go to the trial?
Well, because it's high impact. Because there is a severe impact for, like, if he smashed his jaw there. So it's high impact. He knocked him right out.
So we spoke about
it's
this.
It's clearly moment. High contact. And you can argue that's intentional. He looked. It's not like he was just running along and he went like that. The guy was annoying him and he looked and he threw the arm.
Quite Barry Hall-like.
Because, Riley, as you'll probably point out, what would he get if that's deemed careless?
2 weeks.
Yeah, so that's not enough.
So it's very hard to get more than 2 weeks. And the incident I always go back to is the Jordan Lewis one at the start of the year against Patrick Crisp when he broke someone's jaw and it was classified as medium impact.
Yeah, they stuffed that up.
It is so hard to get high impact now, which is, I think it has to go to the tribunal. He probably has to get 3 or 4 because 2 would seem far.
Yeah, I think it's a 3-week minimum for mine.
Yeah, but how is that only 3 weeks when you knock someone out? Like that, if that happened in the street, like he's going to jail. You know,
but I think it's a bit different when if you turn around and go bang to throwing your arm back is a bit different.
Yeah, but he didn't. Yeah.
Interesting comments from Jack Rewalt on ABC Grandstand.
Yeah, suggesting he was. What did he say?
You reckon he was physically.
But was that done with any knowledge or was that like Basher's such a quiet sort of guy? It was out of character for Basher Hooley.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
And in the end, we're not giving him a character assassination, but what he did was inexcusable and unacceptable in any walk of life.
Rub salt into the wounds for Carlton when he's probably the second best player in the field for 3.5 quarters after that incident.
And Damien Hubbard didn't see it.
No,
neither did Brendan Bolton. Incredible.
You can't tell me when the players stop for a bit of time, they're not looking at the replay. What happened there? Why did he suddenly just collapse?
I found it strange that Bolton said that he only realised something had happened when Jed Lamb was walking off the ground. He'd been on the ground for about 3.5 minutes.
If you're in the coach's box and you're the coach, you're watching the game.
Well,
come on, it's embarrassing.
My issue is with people like you, Riley, who are in the press conference, you should say, come on, Brendan, you did see that.
Well, no, because the thing is, you're never going to get an answer. This is why press conferences are slightly redundant these days. Yeah. I prefer if both coaches just said, look, I saw it, but I prefer not to make any comment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They can say that. They can say, I can't comment. It's got to go in front of the MRP.
Don't lie. Yeah. Oh, we live in a nanny state sometimes. Fair dinkum. Saints versus Gold Coast. There were barely...
Hello, St Kilda fans. Where are you this year?
There were barely 15 people there.
They got off the hook, St Kilda fans, this year.
But why? They're 8th.
21,000 for a Friday night game against the Giants. And everyone was knocking North's crowd last week.
Yeah.
There wasn't many Saints fans there either.
So there was 15,800 there yesterday.
I did not say that.
Or Gold Coast? What are you
did
suggesting?
I did not say that. I just think their fans have been a bit disappointing this year.
Sunday evening is hardly attractive, though. On a
against
cold, against Gold Coast on a cold.
Shouldn't get under 20. St Kilda's got a pretty big fan base. They're not a tiny club.
No, you shouldn't get under 20. I agree with that. Gary Ablett might have turned away a few Gold Coast fans.
I don't think he's going to play this week, is he, Gazza?
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like it.
They're not much without him. And Tom Lynch is really struggling at the moment as well, Julian. Mm. He can't really take a grab. Jonathan Brown did a real... So in the pre-match, it was interesting because...
Yeah, they went head to toe, didn't they?
Well, they had all these packages ready. I know Fox Footy had all these packages ready with Gary Ablett tributing for his 300th. And then when he got pulled out, they had all this airtime they needed to fill. So they had Alistair Lynch and Jonathan Brown just demonstrating how to tussle in a marking contest for about 15 minutes. It was actually great watching.
Poor old Zach Larkins, the producer.
Poor old Zach Larkins, the producer. But it was interesting, Jonathan Brown talking about Tom Lynch jumping for the ball. And he's actually too static on his feet. And I just wonder whether he's just lacking a bit of confidence as well. And Rodney Eade mentioned in his post-match, he probably does have some mental demons at the moment, Tom Lynch.
Well, it was pretty hard on him in the pre-match, Rodney Eade. So he needs to get on his bike and start running. Mm-hmm. So clearly there's a bit of frustration there from the coach. But given the side they had in yesterday, well, that wasn't a bad performance by the Suns. It was okay. Some of the kids were pretty good.
And the Saints have won two in a row now, and they're eight.
They're in the eight. It's incredible, isn't it?
It's amazing that they're in the eight. They've got an interesting run to come, actually. They go to Perth next week, then Richmond for the MRV game the week after. So watch the Saints closely. They're not playing their best footy at all. Yeah. They're just lacking that outside run. And really, it begs the question, is there a team that needs a Josh Kelly more at the moment than St Kilda?
No. Not from the teams that are in the mix. No way. No. Well, I'd argue North's probably in the same basket.
But yeah. I think North are a bit further away than St Kilda. I think St Kilda are a bit more developed.
No, that's a fair point. Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, now it's time for everyone's favourite segment, Fair or Farce. And we have two Martins in today's Fair or Farce.
Great segment.
The first Fair or Farce is to you, Julian. Fair or Farce, Dustin Martin is as good as Gary Ablett was at his best a few years ago. Fair or Farce?
Farce. Not quite there, but very close.
So from one spelling of...
Best player in the competition right now?
Yes, Dustin Martin. I agree. Yes, he is.
No, do you think... Danger.
No, I think that.
We underrate how good Danger
is.
No.
It's a good point. I'll go Dusty.
And it's interesting the way they approach the media, completely different. Dangerfield's been on every forum there is. Dustin Martin, not so. So from one spelling of Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N, to another.
Mick
Riley,
Martin.
Riley, fair or fast, Damien Martin should reply to Clayton Oliver's tweet.
You're fair. I want to keep going for as long as possible.
If he's got a sense of humour, he'll reply.
I'd like to see Matthew Hayden get involved.
What about Colin Miller having a little word as well?
Why doesn't Farnie de Villiers get involved? He was the one that got Damien Martin out.
Well, Alan Donald was the bowler.
Donald the bowler.
Well,
didn't he take six or seven wickets in that innings, Farnie de Villiers?
Yeah, just not that one.
Right.
Anyway, thanks for joining us on the Fox Footy Monday podcast today. An absolute jam-packed pod, so we hope you've made it to the end.
Great round. Great round of footy.
Jules, have a great week. What do you got planned on Fox Sports News and AFL tonight?
Oh, Tom, I say this every time. It's news and it's unpredictable.
Yes.
And it'll be plenty happening.
Danger's shopping off his fishing accessories.
Yes, he is. Mickey Barlow's on tonight.
Good.
Nice. Good bloke.
Nice. Unfortunate about his leg.
Sad injury.
Riley, foxfooty.com.
Big MRP coming up.
Foxfooty.com.au. It's great to have the fearless leader, Ben Waterworth, back. But what have you got planned?
I spoke with Dylan Grimes yesterday. I think he's having a really good year. So hopefully some on him later on the week.
Nice. Have a good week, gentlemen. And we'll see you for the Fox Footy Match Committee podcast on Thursday with our leader, Ben Waterworth, back in the Fox Footy podcast bunker.